We are going to continue a series that we started last week. I'm just going to also just quickly let people know if I wince or feel like or it seems like I'm out of breath or something, it's because I am. I was fishing the other day and I stepped on a log and did the full, you know, slapstick. Both feet went out from under me and I went right down my back, which would have been okay, but the log I slipped on had a branch busted off about that, and I landed right on top of it. So if I'm wincing, it's not because I wish I hadn't said what I just said. It's because my back hurts. But anyhow, we are going to continue a series that we started last week, and what we're doing is we're walking through Psalm 50. So if you have a Bible, you might want to open it up to it, because we're just going to kind of move through it. And we started it last week, and we're taking 3 weeks just to kind of work through this entire psalm. And we're titling the series, A Practical Guide for Worshiping a Holy God. And it's a good thing for us as Christians in church to recognize that worship is something that certainly we talk about, and that word worship is one that we recognize, and it's part of kind of the church. We know that, and yet I wonder sometimes if we really understand what it is, or if we, you know, how practically we do it. And worship sometimes can be seen as an event, which it can be, like singing or coming to church. That can be worship. Worship can be lots of different things, but worshiping God takes on all kinds of different facets. And it kind of happens, or could happen, and should happen all throughout our day, not just once in a while where we, you know, worship now and then I'm going to go off and do something else. Worship is a very ongoing, continuous, and it's a very, very practical thing. And so what we're doing here with this series is looking at one aspect of worshiping God. And so last week we went through the first first six verses of Psalm 50, and the theme of that week was, who is this God that we worship? And today, we're going to go through verses 7 through 13, and verse 7, the first verse of what we do today, really does kind of sum up, I think, in a really good way, what we talked about last week. And so verse 7 from today is this: Hear, O my people, and I will speak, O Israel, and I will testify against you, I am God, your God. And that verse kind of encapsulates a lot of what we talked about last week. Because God is coming to his people. Israel at that time was God's chosen people. They were the ones that God was working with. They were the ones that God was giving his word to, and then it was going out to the rest of the world. Very similar to what the church is now, where, you know, the church, Christians are God's people, and he speaks here, and it goes out to the world, and he uses the church. Back then it was Israel, and so God is coming to his people, to his chosen people, and he's speaking to them. I'm going to tell you something. I have something I want to say. But what he's saying, the way he's saying it, is I'm going to testify against you. And there's this very legal feel to this. I am coming, says God, as God. I am God, your God. I am powerful. I am supreme. And so what we came away with last week, if you weren't here, or even if you were, just a good review, we came away with this. Our main takeaway was this, that God is coming to his people as the powerful and fearful judge. Now, that statement, you know, some of us, personality-wise or generationally or from our experience, that can be a scary statement or a very comforting statement. I don't know. We all take it a little bit differently, that God is a powerful and fearful judge. Some of us, that's just second nature. We understand that. Some of us, that's a scary thing, or perhaps an uncertain thing, or perhaps even an unknown type of thing. For all of us, it is going to be a little bit confusing in the sense that this, that God is also a loving and gentle father. And we talked about that last week a little bit, that God is more than one thing. God is several things, and our relationship with God has several facets. There's several different ways that we interact with God. One of them is as this loving and gentle father, but another one that God does at the same time is he is a powerful and fearful judge, and that's the God that we're talking about in this psalm. This psalm, this series is looking at God in this way, because that's how God presents himself in this psalm. And we see it there in verse 7. I am God. I am powerful. I am the master. I am the ruler. And I'm coming to testify. I'm coming to you, my people. I'm speaking, and what I'm speaking is a judgment. I am testifying against you. I'm going to weigh the evidence. I'm going to pronounce sentence. I'm coming. God is coming to us as a powerful and fearful judge. And again, I don't know how that strikes you, but that's part of our relationship with God. It's not the sum total of it, but it is a big, big part of it. And that's the God that we're looking at. How do we worship that God in a practical way as we live our life? How do we worship God when he comes to us and when we stand before him as a powerful and fearful judge? Okay, so that's where we were last week. And as we pick it up in verse 7 this week, we see God kind of reiterating the whole thing again. This is what's going on. And so now we're going to look at the next few verses here. We're going to look at verses 8 through 15 here. And we're going to ask the question, all right, well, what does it look like then to worship this God? On a practical day-to-day basis, how do I worship God as a powerful and fearful judge? And the way we're going to answer that question is we're going to look at what God says to us. God says here, I'm coming, I'm going to testify, I'm going to tell you things about yourself, I'm going to tell you things about your interactions with me. And so we're going to look at those because God is going to help us to understand, all right, what does it look like now for you and I, for those folks back then, and for you and I now, how do we worship on a daily, practical basis, this powerful God, this God who sees us, who knows us, has the authority and the right to correct, to pass judgment on us, has the power to discipline us. How do we worship that God, okay? So we're going to look here now at these next few verses. What is it that God is saying to us, and what can we learn from it, all right? So, first of all, God starts off his testimony, or his testimony, I guess, against us. The first thing God says is, here's what you're doing right. Here's what you're doing right. And in verse 8, he says this, I do not rebuke you for your sacrifices or your burnt offerings, which are ever before me. He says to his people, okay, here's what you're doing right. You're following the law. You see, sacrifices and burnt offerings, these were things that the nation of Israel was required to do. If you read back in the Old Testament, God had laid out, he'd used Moses, this guy who had brought, God had used Moses to bring the nation of Israel out of slavery in Egypt, brought him into the promised land, and during that time, God had given the nation of Israel rules. This is how I want you to conduct yourself civilly. This is the way I want your government to look. This is the way I want you to interact on a societal basis. Here's how I want you to interact in regard to me. God had laid out for the nation of Israel the things that were required of them. And a lot of that were these sacrifices and burnt offerings. There was a whole system of bringing sacrifices. Some of them were for sin. Some of them were for thanksgiving. Some of them were for all kinds of different things at different times throughout the year for different circumstances. You would bring a sacrifice. Often it was an animal, a goat or a sheep. Sometimes it was grain. But you would bring these sacrifices and these burnt offerings. And they were required to do them on regular intervals. And so what God is saying to them here is, look, you're doing what I have required of you, and that's good. You bring me the sacrifices that I laid out in the law. That's good. You bring me the burnt offerings that I have required of you. That's good. You bring them to me at the right time. They're continually, they're ever before me. You don't do it just once in a while. What he's saying to the nation of Israel here is, you're doing the stuff that is required of you. And that's good. It's kind of like this. You and I, our subject, most of us drove here today. I'm assuming all of us drove here. Somebody drove a car that we were in. If you were driving the car on your way here today, wherever you came from, you were subject to and required to obey all kinds of traffic laws. right? I'm guessing none of us drove through a field where you can just do what you want. We all drove on the roads, and there were stop signs. And when you change lanes, you're supposed to signal. And when you get to a stop sign, you're supposed to stop. There are speed limits. You're only allowed to go so fast. We have all of these rules and requirements that you and I were subject to, things that we were required to do as drivers on the road. Probably all of us obeyed them. Maybe. Most of us. Kind of. I did. I kind of pride myself on following all the traffic laws. Not saying that you should. It's just everybody has their quirks. That's one of mine. I signal every time. I don't cross lanes when And it drives my kids crazy because I'm always correcting. Oh, you shouldn't have done that. But all of us are subject to these traffic laws. And so when we drive, we obey them. And that's good. Why? Because it's required of us, right? It's required of us that when I change lanes, I'm supposed to signal. When I get to a red light, I'm supposed to stop. I'm not supposed to go faster than the speed limit. Okay, there are these rules and we obey them. That's good. God is saying to his people, hey, there are these rules, there are these requirements, these things that I've said you should do or shouldn't do, and you're following them. That's good. You're doing that well. So the first thing God does when he comes to his people as a powerful and fearful judge is he tells them what they're doing well, and he's saying you're doing the requirements. But then he says this. The next thing he does, in the next few verses, he says, but this is what you're doing wrong. What are you not doing correctly? And I'm going to read here verses 9 through 13. Because God says you're obeying the rules, which is good, but there's something missing. And here he says this, I have no need of a bull from your stall or of goats from your pens. For every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountains, and the creatures of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine and all that is in it. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? What is God saying here? I think he's saying this. You're bringing me these sacrifices. You're doing what I ask, but you don't understand why, and you're not doing it with the right heart. So what is wrong? Well, first of all, God says, as we look at this, God is saying, look, you're bringing me these things. You're obeying me, but you think somehow that I need that. In other words, in fact, back in the olden times when people were sacrificing to gods, oftentimes they would do it because they thought, well, the gods need to eat. So Zeus needs to eat, so I need to sacrifice a bull to Zeus so that Zeus can eat something. And if I don't give him a bull, he's going to be hungry. And so we can think sometimes, or God is saying to his people, look, don't miss out on something. I ask you to do these things. I give you these requirements. I want you to bring me things, but I don't need them. I don't have to have them. You are adding nothing to me when you bring them. It's like this. If I obey the traffic laws, that's good. But if I don't obey the traffic laws, somehow the policemen aren't going to eat, that's messed up. You know, the policeman doesn't need me to obey the traffic laws. The policeman get no more pay if I obey the traffic laws than if I don't. The policeman gets no more joy and satisfaction out of life if I obey the traffic laws or if I don't. Me obeying the traffic laws adds nothing to the policeman. You obeying God adds nothing to God. And that's a hard concept for us to grasp, I think. Because why would God ask for something if he didn't need it? Why does God tell the nation of Israel to bring these sacrifices if he didn't need them? Why does God ask anything of you and I if he doesn't need them? We kind of live our life based on that principle. I ask for what I need or want, and when I get something, I get some benefit out of it. God is saying, look, I'm very, very different than you. My people understand something. I don't need the things that you bring me. Why? Because God is all powerful. We looked at that last week. He is complete. One of the words that is used for God here in this psalm is Jehovah, which means the I am, which means he needs nothing else. He existed from all of eternity. Before you and I ever were, God was complete. in and of himself. That's a hard concept for us to grasp, but it helps us to understand that God is saying, look, it's good for you to obey me, but don't make the mistake of thinking that if you don't obey me, somehow I'm worse off. God says, I don't need the things you bring. I ask for them. It's good that you give them, but I don't need them. Another thing that happens, if we believe somehow, and God spends here, you know, time here saying, look, I don't need your bulls. I own them all. If I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. I can get the things that I need. I am complete in and of myself. But if we have the mindset, the reason this is important is this. If we have the mindset that somehow God needs something from me, then what the next natural step is, we think, okay, if I bring it to God and I have fulfilled a need that God has, then somehow God owes me back. Or somehow God and I now are in this negotiation where if I bring something to God that he needs, well, now I have, you know, I've scored one in the ledger here. Somehow God owes me something. It's like I obeyed all of the traffic laws on the way here today. Every single one, as far as I know. Most of them, for sure. There was no policeman here giving me donuts when I drove into the thing. Wouldn't that be nice? I obeyed every law, therefore, state patrolman, you owe me. Because I did what I was supposed to do, and now you should do something for me. Well, that's not how it works, is it? Doesn't work that way with God. God says, I don't need these things that you give me. Your obedience doesn't make me better off, doesn't make me more happy, doesn't make me more complete. And if you obey, I don't owe you anything. It's not that somehow now you have scored one and I have to somehow repay you or somehow we're even. And so if I was going to maybe make a couple of statements about what is God saying to you and I here, here's one. As God is testifying to us, as God is coming as a judge and looking at you and I, his people, and saying, okay, I'm going to testify now against you. Here's one of the things I think in this psalm he's saying. My people think obedience is all that is required. In other words, my people think that if I just do what I'm supposed to do, then God will leave me alone. And that's it. My relationship with God is completely about doing what I'm supposed to do. I think that's one of the things that God is saying, look, that's not right. And we need to recognize, okay, there's more to my relationship with God than just doing what I'm required. And God is saying here, you did what's required, great, but there's something else. There's something missing here besides just doing what you're supposed to do. My people, he looks at you and I think, at times and says, recognize obedience is not all that is required. And maybe taking it one step further, I think what God is saying here, or at least what is implied, I think, is this. God is saying, my people think obedience makes us even. Now we're even. I've obeyed you, God, and now we're even. Or now maybe even you have to give me something back so we can keep the you know, ledger balanced here. I do something for you, now you need to do something for me. And God is saying, no, that's not true. That's not true. In fact, there's a verse in Luke that kind of catches this, I think. It's Luke 17:10. And Jesus here is speaking, and he's telling a story that speaks to this, and he ends it with this. So you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants, we have only done our duty. And that's sometimes a hard statement for us to grasp or to accept, I think. We're unworthy servants. We've only done our duty. Well, what do you mean I'm an unworthy servant? I did what you asked me to do. Somehow that elevates me above that. He says, no, all you did was what was required of you. You've only done your duty. It doesn't confer on us any special favor. God doesn't owe us anything. Now, here's the issue, guys. In this message, we're talking about worshiping God as the fearful, powerful judge. He at the same time is the loving, gentle father. He at the same time is a friend. And so we're focusing on a small section of this, and there's these other things. Jesus said, you know what, I no longer call you just servants. Instead, I have called you friends. So we are his friend. We are his child. But we all are at the same time his servants. And so obedience doesn't make God owe us anything. All I've done is what is required of me. And I don't add anything to you, God. When I obey you, you get no benefit. If there's any benefit gained at all, it's to me or somebody else, but you don't need me to obey. Does that make sense? I wonder if it makes sense, because very much of our culture doesn't live in that way. Much of our culture makes us think that if I do something, then I have something coming back. And there are times when that's very true. It's not that that statement is completely always bad. There are many times when I do something and then I do deserve something back. When I go to work and put in my 8 hours, I deserve a paycheck. That's just very, very, very true. But in this circumstance, that is not true. We are required to obey simply because it is required of us. It gives God nothing. God owes us nothing when we do it. This is the God. This is one aspect of the God that we worship. And God the judge is coming to his people in Psalm 50 and saying, you're obeying, but you're missing the point of obeying. You're obedient, but you don't understand why or what it means. And I'm not willing, says God, to just take your obedience. I want to get the full package out of this. All right? So, what should we do? This is what you're doing right, you're obeying, that's fine. Here's what you're doing wrong. You're obeying for the wrong reasons, with the wrong perspective, with the wrong heart. So what should you do instead? And so God here in Psalm 50 helps us know, all right, well, how do I worship you then, God? How do I obey? How do I relate to you as this powerful, fearful judge? And in verse 14 and 15, he tells us, he says, here's what you should do. And I'll read these verses and we'll just talk through this. Sacrifice thank offerings to God, fulfill your vows to the Most High, and call upon me in the day of trouble. Three things. Sacrifice thank offerings to the Most High, fulfill your vows, sacrifice thank offerings to God, fulfill your vows to the Most High, and call upon me in the day of trouble. Three things God tells us, here's what you should do, and the first one is be thankful. Be thankful. That is a powerful statement that God tells us, I want you to be thankful. And if you're going to be thankful, it requires a couple of things. One, to really truly be thankful the way that I think God wants us to is to recognize, to have the mindset, God, you owe me nothing. You owe me nothing, God. And some of us, that statement is a loaded statement because as people, we can take that in two different extremes and neither one is good. We can think, yes, you owe me nothing and I'm not worth anything. No, God says that's not true, and we're going to get to that in a minute. Just because God owes you nothing doesn't mean that you're worthless. And some of us, because of our history or because of our personality or because of things that have happened to us, can feel like when we say, oh, God owes me nothing, that's true, and I'm just not anything. That is not true. Others of us can say, well, that's just wrong. God absolutely owes me something. I have sacrificed for him. I have obeyed for him. I have suffered for him. And yes, he does owe me something. And that doesn't make any sense at all, because I gave, so I should receive. As people, we tend to gravitate toward these extremes. But just as a very flat statement, being thankful, we have to start from this place. God, you owe me nothing. But if you want to be thankful, you can be thankful knowing that God owes you nothing. In fact, if you really truly believe and accept and are comfortable or accept the fact that God owes you nothing, that is the beginning of an incredible, huge explosion of thankfulness. Because you look around and, God, you owe me nothing, but look at what you've given me. And we have to have this humble awareness of life. You and I are going to walk outside into the sunshine, and there's a red-tailed hawk that lives in that tree over there, and the blackbirds watch him, and the crows watch him. Now, for me, that just thrills my soul. I don't know why, but I grew up in the woods, and I get to walk out in the sunshine of a spring day. I'm smelling the blossoms. You walk around right now, the blossoms are just starting to open up, and you can smell them. There's going to be all these different smells for a long time. You and I are surrounded by things that if we humbly recognize, my goodness, God, you know me, and you've given me this. I love to watch wildlife. My wife, here's where I struggle with traffic laws. I'm driving down the road. Look at that over there, and I'm crossing the lines and stuff because I'm looking all around me. If we have a humble awareness of what's around us, guys, what happens is we begin to recognize there are so many things I can be thankful for. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that are very difficult. It doesn't mean that there aren't things in our life that are painful. I know there are. I have them, you have them. They come in waves sometimes, they come in seasons, but all of us have things in our life that we look at and it's hard and it's painful and it's hurtful, and the people around us fail us and we fail people, and we see those failures and we see the hurts of a lost and sinful world. But in the middle of it, you are surrounded by things to be thankful for if you are humbly aware. When you sit down to a good meal, do you recognize what a blessing that is? Do you recognize what a blessing that is? I like this, and it tastes good, and I get to eat it. That is not an accident. Every good and perfect gift comes from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no shadow or variation due to change. The sun today is put in the sky by God. He knew you and I were going to walk out into it, and as his children, it was exciting to him to know that we were going to enjoy it. I can be thankful for that. God didn't owe me the sun, but he gave it to me. God didn't owe me a red-tailed hawk in that pine tree right out the door, but he gave it to me. What has God given to you that he didn't owe you? It's thousands of things. Do you recognize them? Do you see them? Are you aware of them? And are you humble enough to say, wow, God, thank you for that? Thankfulness comes, I think it begins with, God, you owe me nothing. And that's the first thing God tells us to do. You owe me nothing. I'll be thankful. Here's a second thing. Fulfill your vows to the Most High, okay? First he says be thankful, then he says be obedient. I want you to be obedient. And the thought there is, you deserve everything. You created me, God. You are powerful. I am your servant, and nothing I give you is too much. You deserve everything that I can give you. So I'm going to obey. You know, God told him, you're obeying me. That's very good. And we need to recognize that obedience is a good thing, and I will obey. And this calls for a steady diligence, a very steady, today I'm going to do what you asked me to do, Lord. I want to know what's required of me today, and today I'm going to do it. Tomorrow I'm going to wake up, and I'm going to say the same thing. I want to know what you want me to do today, Lord, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do that. I'm going to be diligent, and I'm going to be steady. There's a steady diligence of saying, God, you are my master, and I'm going to obey. Tell me what's required of me. Help me to do it. That's going to be my work today. That's going to be my work tomorrow. Be obedient. You deserve everything, God. Be thankful, be obedient, and this last one I really like a lot. It's be dependent. Call upon me in the day of trouble. Call upon me in the day of trouble. God says, I want you to be dependent on me. And I think that for me anyhow, the thing that helps me to do that is to recognize, Lord, you give lavishly. You give lavishly. There's something about, for me anyhow, and I suspect this is true of all parents and moms, maybe above every other person in the world, you know this. You long for your kids to be satisfied and to do well. You just long for that. Your heart goes out to them, and you want your kids to do well. You want your kids to be cared for. You want your kids to not just get by. You want them to flourish and to thrive. I just see it all the time. My son he likes cars and stuff, and so he's young, he's you know, beginning to get his own tools. For years he used mine, and now he's starting to get his own. And the other day I was helping him with his truck, and he had his socket set out. And I'm looking at his socket set and thinking, you know, that's a pretty good socket set, but I have a better one. And in my mind I'm thinking, I should just give him mine. I'll take his that, you know, sockets are missing and it's in a cardboard box. I'll take that one. I'm going to give you mine. Why? Because he deserves it? No, he lost his sockets. Because I owe him? I don't owe him. But because I want to bless him. And when we recognize that our God gives lavishly and loves to do it, it helps me to be dependent. I'm in trouble, God. I have a need. I have a desire. I'm going to come to you and I'm going to ask. I'm going to let you know what it is. And we need to have a joyful contentment in what God gives. A joyful, I am just so excited, God. And I'm going to ask you for what I need, ask you for what I desire, and I'm going to take it from your hand humbly. The three things God asks us to do: be thankful, be obedient, be dependent. And we're going to end this section with this. Then something happens when we do those things. So where are we at? God says, I'm coming to testify against you. You're obeying me. That's good, but you're not doing it well. You're obeying me with the wrong understanding. You're obeying me with the wrong motives. You don't understand what it's all about. So here's what I want you to do instead. I want you to be thankful. I want you to be obedient. That's good. And I want you to be dependent. And then he finishes it with, what will happen? If we do those three things, what is it that's going to happen? Well, first of all, at the end of verse 15, God says, I will deliver you. I will deliver you. We are protected by a loving Father. When I do those things, when I'm thankful, I'm humbly aware of what God is doing. I'm obedient. I'm steadily diligent in what God is asking of me. And I'm dependent. I'm asking God for the things I need. When I do those things, the first thing that happens is God says, I will deliver you. I will come through. I will protect you. I will provide for you as a loving mother, as a loving father. Here's the second thing that will happen, and you will honor me. We will revere a powerful judge. When we do these things, when we're thankful, obedient, and dependent, when we're growing in those things, obeying what God asks us to do, recognizing and saying thank you for the things he gives us, and recognizing what I need you. You don't need me, but I need you. When those three things are happening on a daily basis, on a regular basis, what happens? God delivers me. I begin to understand and relate to God as that loving Father, but also I honor him. I begin to relate to him as a powerful judge. The thing that we're talking about, how do I worship God? Well, it starts, so much of Christianity is not, I'm going to do this big, amazing thing. So much of Christianity is, I'm going to do these simple things again and again and again and again. So much of a powerful, wonderful, satisfying life between you and your God and you and the people around you is, I'm going to do the very small things today. I'm going to do those very small things tomorrow. I'm going to keep doing those very small things in increasing measure, in increasing joy, in increasing magnitude for the rest of my life. And much of it nobody will see. Much of it will be in very small increments, but I'm going to learn to be more thankful today. I'm going to learn to be more obedient today. I'm going to learn to be more dependent today. And each of those things might be very small steps forward. But if I take very small steps forward, it doesn't look like I'm, you know, much is happening right now. If I kept doing this for the next 2 hours, where would I end up? Probably in the new building somewhere. If I kept doing this for the next 2 weeks, where would I end up? Hungry and down the road a long way. You do that for the rest of your life, where are you going to end up? Deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in your relationship with God. What's the worship God requires? Be thankful. Be obedient. Be dependent. What will happen? God says, I will deliver you. You will grow close to me as my son or my daughter, and you will honor me. You will grow close to me as my servant, and I will be the judge, and I will be the king and the ruler, and we will worship God in an increasingly full way. That's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. You know why? Because I can do those three things. I can be thankful. I can work on that. I can be obedient. I can do that. I can be dependent. I can do those things. God says that's the path to worshiping a holy God. God is so good. God is so good. And I'm grateful to be His. I'm grateful to be His with you. So let's, as individuals and as a church body, work on those things. Let's be thankful. Let's be obedient. Let's be dependent. Let's pray. Father, thank you that you are such a good God. Lord, and you ask everything of us, and yet you ask it in a way, and you ask of things that we can give you. It is not impossible to serve the powerful, holy God. Far from it. It's within our grasp. Help us, Lord, to be men and women who do it. More and more, continually, regularly, for our entire lives, God, we desire to do that, to honor and worship you as our Father, as our King, as our friend, all the different ways. Help us, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.